This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To talk about the Mets and their opening series, we bring in Tim Britton from The Athletic. Hey, Tim, how are you?
How's it going, Lori?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. So, big picture, let's start with, as I was saying to some of my listeners, glass half empty, glass half full. So on the half full, on the positive side of things, what were some things that you saw in the opening series for the Mets against the Astros that were some positives that you took away?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you went into the season and you thought about the Mets' various strengths and weaknesses, you would have said on the weakness side is we don't know what you're going to get out of the starting rotation.
Yep.
Especially you look at the trio of starters they were throwing the first 3 days of the season is not exactly who you want starting games 1, 2, and 3 of a National League Championship Series. And Clay Holmes making his first start in 7 seasons, Tyler McGill, and Griffin Canning. But I think you saw from those three guys why the Mets believe in them to various degrees. You know, Holmes, it was rockier than what his spring had suggested it might be. But this is all a learning curve for him. It's going to be basically a start-to-start learning curve where, you know, I was talking to him and the pitching coach, Jeremy Hefner, and, you know, they're figuring out, like, what his between-innings routine has to be, what he's got to do. Does he need 8 warm-up pitches for the next inning if the Mets go down 1, 2, 3? Like, it's these little things that if you're starting for 5 years in the major leagues, you haven't thought about for 4.5 of them. But because it's Holmes' first go-round at that in so long, he's got to get that back down. You know, with McGill, I think he looked like the kind of pitcher who could have a breakout season the way a lot of people who look at this stuff and people who know more than I do think he can. You know, the stuff is there. He's kind of simplified his pitch mix. He's a guy who threw 3 pitches when he came up in 2021 and was throwing 8 by the end of last season. And now he's kind of figured out what the 3 or 4 best of them are, and he's going to throw those. And then Canning is a guy that the Mets, they've added a pitch here or there, but they basically think if he just stops throwing his fastball all the time, he could be better. And we saw him pound the Astros over and over with sliders, a team that knows him pretty well, and a team that he was able to subdue for most of Saturday night. So, you know, I think the glass half full view is the offense is going to come around, but this pitching staff look like it has something in there that they can build on going forward.
Yeah, so and as you say, Holmes, McGill, Canning would certainly have been thought to be towards the end of this rotation, and the top 3 pitchers haven't pitched yet in Kodai Senga, David Peterson, who will pitch in Miami, and then Sean Manaea, who's on the injured list, but hoping, you know, Mets fans sort of hoping he will be back soon within the month of April. But when you see the 3 who pitched, I think around baseball, there are a lot of teams that look at the Mets rotation. Obviously, Frankie Montas is injured back, you know, call it June 1st-ish or something like that. A lot of people who thought that the Mets and David Stearns have left this rotation, it's not that it wasn't good enough, that they hadn't done enough with the rotation. When you see this, even though it's still a work in progress, when you see those opening 3 games, you know, is there a sense of the in Stearns we trust kind of mantra of that this guy just has an eye for figuring out and finding value when it comes to pitching?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Mets certainly established a line of credit last year with what they were able to do with Severino, with Manaea, even with Jose Quintana, a holdover, and how they were able to kind of get the most out of him down the stretch of the season. So I think there's certainly, from the fan base's perspective, a little bit more faith in what Stearns sees in these guys, what Jeremy Hefner and the Mets' entire pitching development group can get out of the pitchers they have on the roster. You know, I think in years past, there might have been a lot more trepidation about a starting trio like Holmes, McGill, and Canning. But this year, there is, at least to some degree, some faith that the people in charge do know what they're doing.
Also on the plus side, before we get to the offense a little bit, on the plus side, so where the concern was the starting pitching, I will say the bullpen would have been something that, you know, you feel like maybe they upgraded adding some arms. I think that's another plus that you walk away from this, you know, opening series. It's just one series, small sample size, but there seem to be a lot to like about the bullpen. We'll start with Edwin Diaz, where you're just never quite sure with him. You know, which version of Diaz are you getting? Coming out of spring training, what did you see from Diaz that should have Mets fans excited?
I mean, that was the best we've seen him in a little while. Certainly better than we saw him at any point in spring. And you go back to last season, there were outings like this here and there, but he didn't build on them consistently quite as he had in the past. But that was, you know, an Edwin Diaz that is attacking the strike zone, that knows that his stuff plays even if it's in the strike zone, with you know, a fastball that's hitting 97, a slider that is as good as anyone in baseball. You know, if he's got command of those two pitches, and it's not even, it doesn't have to be pinpoint or anything like that, but if he's got basic control of those two pitches, he's going to be tough to hit. And so Diaz looked as good as anyone out of that bullpen all weekend. And then you throw in some of the other guys that got them out of jams, Reed Garrett on Friday, and Max Kranich, even in a losing effort on Saturday, showing why they like his arm now that he's shifted to the bullpen, a guy who can pump 98 with his fastball all of a sudden and get guys like Yordan Alvarez out in big spots. You know, that gives you a sense that maybe this team has a little bit more depth to its pen than it certainly did at this time last year, when guys like Garrett and Jose Buto and Daniel Nunez were really unknown quantities.
Yeah, what's the latest on Daniel Nunez and his timing in terms of when they think he'll be ready to pitch with the big club?
Yeah, I mean, so he's not on the injured list. It was just basically optioning him to AAA to give him a little bit more time to get ready for the major league load that he's going to have. So I think we could see him, you know, the quickest we could see him is, what, 15 days from the start of the season. So the second week of April, you know, depending on how the bullpen is performing at that point and how he has been able to build himself up in AAA, if he's able to go back-to-back or go for more than three outs in an inning, in an outing, you know, he could be up as soon as the second week of April. Maybe if there's any, you know, if it takes him a little bit longer than that, they might stretch it, you know, another week or two. But I think, you know, in the month of April, Nunez will be back in the Mets bullpen.
As you look at this bullpen and the usage, you know, in people's roles and things like that, what did you think of what you saw out of Jose Buto?
Yeah, I think Buto's an interesting guy because he's not necessarily going to be the, you know, like you think of a bullpen as, okay, you know, Diaz is the closer. You'll have probably Ryan Stanek and or AJ Minter for the seventh and eighth innings. You've got Reed Garrett to fill in when those guys aren't 100% or pitched the night before. And then Buto is the guy who is not necessarily part of that high leverage late game hierarchy, but he's the guy who the starter goes out in the middle of the sixth inning. There's a little bit of trouble and Buto can get you out of that sixth inning and then he can pitch the seventh as well. I think, you know, they learned last year, he's not a guy you're going to pitch in the seventh inning three nights in a row. He's probably not a guy you're going to pitch in the seventh inning two nights in a row. So they want to, you know, get the most out of him when he does pitch, which is why we saw him on Saturday go for, you know, get out of one inning, pitch the next inning, and then come back for another one on top of that. I think they want to get kind of six outs out of him. You think back to how the Mets would use Seth Lugo at times early on in his relief career with them, a guy who's pretty good. You know, could be a leverage guy, but doesn't bounce back quite like the other guys in that role. And so expect him to be in there for 4 to 7 outs or something like that when he comes into a game, because he's probably not going to pitch for a day or two after.
talked to Tim Britton from The Athletic about the Mets, and had a caller before also ask about Carlos Mendoza and the use of pitching in the first series. And in particular, the that he left Canning in there in that game on Saturday with, you know, when he, things were so positive. It's the sixth inning, and now, you know, runner on base, and up comes Yordan Alvarez, and there's two outs, and instead of going to Buto and the bullpen there, he leaves Canning in there. Were you surprised he left him in there so, you know, to face Alvarez a third time?
A little bit, to be honest. I thought, you know, it wouldn't have surprised me if they had just cut Canning's outing at short after five, given what he produced at that point. You know, you look, there's the two different sides you can take to it, which is A, that Alvarez has really good career numbers against Canning. I think he came into that game like 5-for-13 or something like that off of him. And on the other hand, you know, Canning had done really well against him the first two times. It had made him look not like Yordan Alvarez at the plate, so maybe you trust him to get him that one last time. You know, after the game, Mendoza said he did not love the matchup of Buto against Alvarez, that Buto was warming up basically to come in for Christian Walker, the next batter. You know, you can say, you know, why not have A.J. Winter up for that spot, or or even Danny Young, another lefty.
Yep.
Alvarez's OPS last year against lefties was over 1,000. He's a great hitter, regardless of what side the pitcher's coming from. And so I think, you know, the Mets, they wanted to trust Canning in that spot. They wanted to see what he could do, and it burned them. That slider was probably the worst, the one pitch that Canning wishes he had back. He wanted to bury it in the dirt instead of leave it just enough up for Alvarez to hit it, to do what he does, and hit it in the right center gap. So, yeah, I think it's a reasonable second guess or even a first guess of Mendoza, but the kind of move that you're probably more apt to make as a manager on the third day of the season than on the 161st.
One player that certainly jumped out on Saturday was Jose Siri. And he is a riveting player who, when he is in there, you can't take your eyes off of. How do you think the Mets will go with this rotation in center field between Tyrone Taylor and Siri?
Yeah, I mean, I had kind of assumed it was going to be Siri from the start. Like on opening day and kind of playing that role that Harrison Bader did at the start of last year, and Taylor would have to outplay him to win more playing time the way he did last year in that dynamic. The Mets instead started Taylor each of the first two games. I think, you know, a lot of it depends on the pitching matchup and who they feel is the best matchup for Siri. So probably guys who don't induce a lot of swing and miss, because Siri has a lot of that in his offensive game. He led the league in strikeout rate last year. So, you know, Mets fans will get tired probably of seeing Siri come up and swing for the fences and chase a little bit. But you saw on Saturday the flip side to his game. You know, first of all, just a phenomenal defensive center fielder, as good as anyone in baseball probably, in tracking balls down in center. And then second, what he can do when he does get on the bases. And it's, you know, not the most fundamental side of baseball. But when you've got the speed to do what he did, racing home from third, when you catch the pitcher being just a little bit lackadaisical throwing to first base, that's the kind of thing that is so exciting about this sport and so exciting about him. And one of the things the Mets really liked when they acquired him is the kind of jolt that he can give to an offense when things are going right for him.
Yeah, and a team, I also was thinking that obviously the team chemistry and the OMG Mets last year and the grimace and all the fun stories and the energy around that team. And while a lot of players are back, some of the guys, you know, obviously Jose Iglesias is not there. Luis Severino was one who was, you know, certainly a part of a lot of the energy in the dugout and all of that. I wonder what, you know, I've been wondering what role Jose Siri and his energy, you use the word jolt, but what's he been like with the team in the dugout or any of that, you know, as you watch the team and watch them in spring training and around the clubhouse? He just seems like a guy who brings a different level of energy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the right read of it. But you see him in the clubhouse and in the dugout, he's generally got his body moving, doing something. Has fit in, you know, right away with the rest of the Mets lineup. So you know, I think talking to David Stearns last year about, you know, do you bring players in for that dynamic, for that clubhouse dynamic? And he said it's really hard to ever predict what it's going to be like. You know, the Mets didn't sign Jose Iglesias because of what he did on the side as a pop singer, or what he could do as a kind of glue guy in the clubhouse.
Right.
He signed him because he's like a pretty, you know, a solid defender mm-hmm. who can put the ball in play. And he just happened to have one of the best seasons of his career and do all that other stuff too. So, you know, what they like most about Siri is how he plays center field defensively. But, you know, they know that there is that possibility that, you know, he fits the clubhouse in a way that provides that kind of daily energy that you need mostly, you know, you don't need it necessarily on March 30th, but when you get into mid-May and mid-August and those stretches of the season where it gets a little tougher to be ready and going through the grind each and every day, that's when you need that kind of player the most.
Offensively, how much was this the Mets, I don't know, either some bad luck or Houston pitching being particularly good, or just the Mets, you know, the Mets bats, you know, getting off to a slow start, not looking good?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not unusual to see pitchers a little bit ahead of hitters at this time of year, because they've been working, they've been building themselves up a little bit more, you know, concentratingly over the course of spring training. And in Houston, you've got, you know, Framber Valdez, who rolls out of bed and throws 180 innings at a 3 ERA over the last several years. You've got Hunter Brown, who was, you know, as good as anybody in the American League for the last 4.5 months of last season, kind of looked a bit like Zach Wheeler before Zach Wheeler took off with the Mets a few years ago. So, you know, those are two really good pitchers. I think, you know, you kind of reading between the lines, Mendoza seemed a little bit less encouraged by how they performed against Spencer Arrighetti on Saturday. He thought they kind of left some opportunities out there. And, you know, sometimes that happens. You face two good pitchers, and then the third one, who's maybe not quite as sharp, you kind of let off the hook a little bit. So, you know, it's three games. I think it's something you have to take with a grain of salt when you talk about how good the Mets pitching staff look, is that the Astros are probably also a little bit behind offensively.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it goes both ways, but it is still a little bit too early to sound the alarm about the offense or about, you know, Francisco Lindor being 0-for-11 and all that stuff.
Any concerns with Brett Baty, who had such a terrific spring? And again, it is only a few games. But how much did you believe, or were you thinking that, all right, this is the time Baty is going to be able to deliver at the major league level, and anything you saw in the first three games that would have you pause?
I mean, I do think, like, he's one of the guys that, you know, a good start is most important for. Like, you know, we mentioned Lindor has had the slow starts for the Mets in the past and has still ended up, you know, getting his numbers in the end. You know, for a guy like Baty, who doesn't have that track record in the major leagues and who, you know, may not have an everyday job for very long, considering Jeff McNeil will be back sometime in the month of April, probably, that, you know, it's a little bit more important, and there's a little bit more stress and pressure on him performing right away during the regular season. You know, he only got the two starts. So I think it's a little bit early, and again, you know, against pretty good starting pitching with the Astros. So I think, you know, this series in Miami gives you another look at it, and then, you know, give him kind of 10 days, 2 weeks before you really start worrying too much about what you're seeing. If he's getting the ball in the air to the pole side, that's what you kind of want to see from him. That's what he was doing a little bit more of in spring training than he has in the past. That's when he's been at his best. If he's rolling over the ball, hitting it on the ground a bit more, that's when you're worried that he's falling into kind of the old habits that have been tough for him to break at the major league level.
Before I let you go, I wanted to just ask, you obviously have seen and heard all about the torpedo bats and the, you know, obviously the Yankees are using them. Any players on the Mets so far this, you know, this year or spring training that you noticed are using the torpedo bat?
Not that I've noticed. You know, I heard of it was the other day, and I've been in the clubhouse to get a chance to ask guys about it. And, you know, I know some players experiment with their bats all the time. I was talking to Brandon Nimmo about his trip to, I think it was Baton Rouge, to meet with the Marucci folks and to kind of get a bat perfectly tailored to his swing and all that. So the bat technology has certainly become a bit farther from where it was 10 or 15 years ago. But I don't know of any Mets offhand that have redistributed the wood or however it is that the Yankees have done with the torpedo bats.
And then in terms of Lindor, I know you wrote a story about Francisco Lindor and, you know, the slow start versus a hot start. You wrote a story for The Athletic about that. What, I know we're really early. What is it about getting off to a hot start for Lindor that it is something that's, for a player that's as talented as he is, why does he think this is something that just, you know, kind of keeps happening to him? And what is he doing to change that?
I mean, he doesn't know. That was the interesting part of the answer yesterday when he was asked that. But, that's a fantastic question, and count me among those trying to figure it out. I think you go back to, like, the circumstances of each slow start. You go to 21, his first year with the team, had just signed the huge extension. There's a lot more pressure on that kind of start than there is in a normal year for him. He heard the boos pretty early in Queens, and that kind of threw him off coming from Cleveland. So I think that year, you really understand why it happened. Really, in 22, he had a better... In 22 and 23, the starts were not so bad. But when you bookend them with 21 and then with what happened last year where he's hitting under 200, I think as late as like May 20th, 21st, before just going off from that point forward, it does feel like more of a pattern, to kind of address that. You know, this year he came in... In years past, he basically primed himself to be ready for opening day on February 14th when they first report to camp, to be he calls it peaking, like to be at his best right then and there. Whereas this year, he came to camp preparing to build a little bit more gradually to that point so that he's hitting that point, that peak point, not until, toward the end of spring training. And one of the hitting coaches, Jeremy Barnes, said you could kind of see it click that last week of spring training that, okay, now he's ready for the regular season. You know, it hasn't translated into results, but you look at some of the balls he hit, that's the first ball he hit in the first inning of opening day.
Yeah.
Was stung, and just a great play by Jeremy Pena at shortstop. If that ball goes into left field, that's a very different approach to the season for Lindor and what his results look like now. So it's those little things that kind of add up. He knows that it's going to be a topic of conversation until he proves it otherwise. But I do think on the Mets list of concerns, that is rather low.
And he did really drill that ball, and it was a great play by Pena, unfortunately robbing him at shortstop there. Tim Britton does a great job covering baseball and the Mets for The Athletic. Tim, appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Oh, anytime. Thanks for having me, Lori.